Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Joy Richard Morris from Anchor Hill Vineyard in, how do you pronounce it,
Monmouth.
Yeah. Right on the Welsh-England border, but definitely in Wales, and we're going to talk a wee bit about Welsh wines. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're fine, thanks.
Fine, thanks.
Perfect. I do like the Welsh accent. Joy's got a very nice Welsh accent. You're the English, Richard.
Sorry. Oh, no. No, I'm from Cardigan in West Wales, where the accent tends to be a lot milder.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
I tell people I've got the difference between a Kiwi accent and an Australian accent is the Kiwi accent's like a sophisticated version of the Aussie accent, but the Aussies don't like
That's not what my Aussie mates say.
No, I'm sure not. But I've got an Aussie guy who works for me, and he doesn't like me saying that.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Anyway, well, we're going to talk about Welsh wines now. You guys are on the border. We were talking a wee bit earlier that you're saying your climate's actually almost continental where you are. But I always think of Wales as, you know, pretty wet. And I presume that's more to the west coast. How many producers are there in Wales and where are they located?
Most of the vineyards in Wales are in South Wales. There are six.
Near Cardiff or?
The sort of Vale of Glamorgan, which is west of Cardiff. There are quite a few.
Yeah.
There are six in Monmouthshire, which probably says more about our climate than anything else.
Mm-hmm. How many in total in Wales do you think?
We think about 17.
17?
Yeah. But there's a couple in Anglesey, in North Wales. I think there's a new one being planted near Wrexham as well. I can't remember the name of the vineyard. There's a very good vineyard in Newtown called Penarth Vineyard. They make some very nice sparkling wine. So the areas really which lend themselves to, from a climate point of view, to growing vines in Wales really is what we call the border country, between England and Wales, Monmouthshire and the Vale of Glamorgan. Those are the sort of key growing areas.
Okay, and 17 producers, so not a massive amount. You know, if you think about it, England's got almost as many producers as New Zealand now,
yeah,
which is crazy, although I think New Zealand producers are a bit bigger. What sort of, you guys are what, almost 10 acres here, aren't you?
Yeah, we're 10 acres. I looked at some stats, actually, for the Welsh Government some 2 years ago, and approximately Wales are producing, in a good year, about 100,000 litres of wine, which is about 2 to 3% of the whole of the British production. So relatively small compared to England.
Yeah. And is it mainly consumed locally, or I noticed that you guys export to England. You call it exporting. Yeah. Throw a bottle over the border. But
yeah, they drink it with Coke over there.
do you guys, is it all consumed locally, or as you know, I imagine, you know, people are quite patriotic, you know, even in the UK, there's a lot of its internal consumption.
Yes, our biggest market is Wales, for that very reason. You know, people are very patriotic, and the fact that they can buy a decent wine that's made in Wales is very important.
Yeah.
But we get a cross section of people, really. We get a lot of holiday makers. We're in a holiday area.
Tourist area.
So
yeah,
we get a lot of tourists come to the vineyard and take the wine home with them.
Yeah.
To various places. And we are getting more, suppliers in England. So it's the whole of the UK really is our market.
And Richard was saying earlier that you've even got a supplier in Melbourne, Australia, taking a couple of cases.
We have, yes. I don't think it's going to be our major
supplier. just for any Australian listeners, who would they get your wines from in Australia?
It's in Auburn.
Melbourne. It is Auburn Cellars, I think. Isn't
Auburn
it?
Cellars, it's, that's it's, right. Auburn Cellars in Melbourne.
Yeah. Okay, big plug for them here.
Yeah. Wayne Liked. So if you're listening, Wayne, keep on selling the wine, buddy.
Another pellet's coming out.
Yeah.
Fantastic. In England, there's the English Wine Producers, which is a sort of almost like a marketing board for English wine. And I understand that the reason originally there was no UK wine producers was because Wales had already had their sort of own marketing board when the English Wine Producers was set up. So they said, well, we'll deal with England, you guys deal with Wales then. But you're saying earlier, Richard, that the Welsh marketing board, whatever it's called, doesn't exist anymore. Yeah,
no, I don't even know how long ago that was, but no, it doesn't. Welsh vineyards are in the main part of the Southwest Vineyard Association, which is obviously also part of the United Kingdom Vineyard Association. We haven't got our own representative body at the moment. It is being looked at. I think the Welsh government are possibly very keen. One of the key areas that they're trying to develop in Wales, apart from tourism, is the food and drinks industry. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, obviously, developing the Welsh wine industry, particularly on the back of, if I can say that, some of the successes we've had in terms of some of the awards we've won, is obviously quite attractive. So we have actually got a meeting of Welsh vineyards towards the end of this month, which is April, to get together and see how we can work together more and have more of a Welsh representation within the UK and also from a worldwide point of view, of course.
Yeah, yeah, and I understand you're actually going to, there's the English wine trade tasting in
9th of May.
9th of yeah. May coming up, and I understand you guys are going to have your wines there as well.
Yeah, we are this year. Yeah, it's the first year we've been.
I've never seen any Welsh wine there in the past.
I think you're probably right. So
keep an eye out for your bottles, which I must admit, particularly your sparkling wine, very nicely designed labels. Who designed that?
A bit of a joint effort, really. Mostly David and me, with some input from Richard.
And a guy called James, who works for Gigantic Designs in London. So
we gave him our ideas, and he put them into the form that you can see. So
nice clean labels. I'm very
pleased with them.
Yeah, your rosé bottle, your sparkling rosé bottle, is a really nice-looking bottle in terms of the colour and the way the label works, because it's quite a clear label. Quite like it, actually. So what are the main grape varieties grown in Wales? Now, you guys are trying Albarino and Triomphe and Chardonnay and Pinot Noir and grubbed up your Sauvignon Blanc. So
I think most of the vineyards are growing some of the older German varieties, like Reichensteiner and Dornfelder and some Seyvel, of course. But they're increasingly, I think, as people develop their vineyards, they are beginning to look to plant the classic Champagne varieties of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, a little bit of Pinot Meunier as well. We've got some Meunier here. White Castle, just up the road from us, for example, I know they've planted Pinot.
Is there a move to the sparkling wines? You know, because in England, everybody's just jumping in on sparkling wines.
Yeah, I think so. I think, if England and Wales are going to get a reputation for producing world-class wines, it's going to be sparkling wines, definitely, because the climate suits. Things like Pinot and Chardonnay are cool climate varieties, and as long as you've got the right little miso climate in the UK, then they will grow very well here.
In England, a lot of people talk about the Weald, with the chalk soils and all that, although some of the better wines aren't on chalk. Is there chalk here, or is there any particular soils that dominate the area?
Well, we've got a clay loam soil,
okay,
but we have got a lot of limestone, which obviously helps with drainage.
Yep.
And
heat retention.
Heat retention as the stones come to the surface.
Yep. Clay is quite a nasty one for working vineyards.
So. If you've got too much clay, but we've got a very nice balance. There's a small amount of clay, but it's mainly a loam soil.
Okay, because clay gives a richness to wines often.
Yeah, it does. It does give the flavour, as does limestone. It's very similar to the type of soil you've got in Chablis, for example. It's heavier, definitely heavier, but it's that type of you taste our Chardonnay, for example, which is not dissimilar from a slightly oaked Chablis, for example.
It's probably doesn't quite have the nose intensity on the nose, but the structure on the mouth, but possibly a bit richer actually on the mouth.
Not
in alcohol, but just in fruit weight.
So
that might be Lees aging, though. Quite sure, or Lees work there.
But I think in Wales as well as England, the future is going to be Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, with the emphasis on sparkling wines.
Yep. Is there much planting going on in Wales? Like you're looking to expand, double in size, but...
Not as far as we know. I think it's still something that a lot of people think, well, you can't grow vines in Wales. Yeah. And obviously it is very site specific. So I think it'll be a more limited planting in Wales than in England. But
I think that might develop. The Welsh government are interested in seeing how it could be developed. And actually, you know, Pinot Noir, for example, where a good quality Pinot, you can get up to £3,000 a ton. And if you're getting a yield of 2-3 tons an acre in a really good year, as a diversified cash crop for farmers, as long as on the right sort of slopes, right sort of mesoclimate, which I keep on going on about, I think there are some very interesting opportunities, actually. So it's something I think that will develop, but it's going to take a few years to educate and research, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Richard, you went to Plumpton along with David.
Yeah. Not at the same time, but
No. Is there any viticultural courses that you can do in Wales, or is everything done through Plumpton?
It's all done through Plumpton, yeah. Plumpton is the leading viticulture and enology school in the UK, yeah.
Is there any others? I only know Plumpton.
Yeah, I think Cirencester Agricultural College do some sort of...
They do a wine marketing.
Yeah, it's more on the sort of marketing side, and So no, there isn't really. It is the place to go. Yeah.
Okay. So you got to still get out to England occasionally. How do you feel about paying the toll back and forth?
Well, at least we pay to come home.
So. Yes.
I was actually thinking about this. Sounds a bit rude, but I was thinking about it. It's like you don't really want to pay, have a fee to leave the country. You want to pay to get in. You know, it's like,
yeah,
that sends the right signal.
They've got it the right way around, the government, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I was wondering why you didn't. Where does that money go? Does it go to Wales or does it go to the English government?
From the bridge.
I think it goes to the owner of the bridge.
Oh, is it a private bridge?
It's a private bridge. The old Severn Bridge is a private bridge, and I think the new one is as well. So I think the government, to my knowledge, can control how they increase the tolls. You know, there's a certain agreement, but yeah.
And at the moment, you're getting your grapes made in Three Choirs. Does that mean it can't be called Welsh wine, or because
no, you can still call it Welsh wine.
Even though it's been made in another country.
Even though it's been made in another country, yeah. But you know, when we've got our winery, touch wood, then you know, as David said earlier, we'll be able to make the wine biodynamically as well, and using concrete and wood and oak rather than stainless steel, and longer ferments and more natural ferments, and so it'll be a different style of wine. So. Mm. And we'll have the control on how we make it, of course.
What about some of the changes with regards to, I suppose the old word was appellation, but these days it's more PDOs and, is it PDOs and
PGIs? You know, Welsh wine has got to follow the same process because it's part, we're part of the UKVA. From a personal point of view, I think it's over bureaucratic, hasn't always been well thought out, and largely unnecessary in my view. But rules are rules, and we're part of the EU, and that's the world we live in.
So your wines don't say PGI on the bottle, or not that I noticed, anyway.
Not the ones you've seen at the moment, because all the wines you've drunk today have been 2009, 2010, and 2011. But moving forward, our labelling is going to have to adjust to the new regulations.
And how does that apply? How do the regulations apply to you?
Just in terms of what you put on the legal requirements of what you put on the label.
And which are?
For example, depending on whether it's a PDO or a PGI, it's what you can call it, whether you can refer to the, whether you can call it a Cornish wine or a Welsh wine, for example, whether you call it a quality wine. And there's certain wordings that you've got to use depending on whether you're making a table wine or whether you're making a regional wine or a quality wine. I'm not 100% au fait with the rules at the moment because I haven't actually had to address that. And we'll be getting advice through the Wine Standards Board, for example, giving examples of what you've got to put on your label and everything. And we'll have to make our decision at that time on what category of wine we're going to go for, whether it's PDO or PGI.
What does PDO and PGI stand for again?
PGI is Product Geographical Indicator, and PDO is product denomination of origin, I think.
Yeah, so there's PDO is like the Appellations, and PGI is what more like vendor pays.
And you can still make a table wine, of course, and avoid being in that category. So where what you put on the label is more relaxed. So it's a choice we're going to have to look at, really. But it basically just means more wording on the label. So the label, the legal label, just gets a bit more cluttered.
Or the back label.
Yeah, we use the back label as the legal label. There's no legislation on whether it's got to be the main front label or the back label. You know, whether it helps the public decide more discerningly on what they're drinking, I doubt it very much.
I don't think it does. I think it makes it more confusing for people.
Yeah.
You know, because...
Well, I, to be honest, I'm in the wine trade and I'm a bit confused by it all, so...
It almost makes it that you've got to know, have a certain amount of knowledge before you know what you're buying, and I think that's really not a good thing.
I think it's just jobs for the boys, civil servants in Brussels and elsewhere who need something to do, and this is one of the targets, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Although there's nothing wrong with harmonisation, you know, I think that there's advantages.
No. Yeah.
And the systems were, each European country had their own system, so.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, that might make things a bit more easier.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe. do the French ever follow EU laws? Sorry, that's a bit controversial, perhaps. But
I'm just thinking
about, you know, when you go and buy cheese from a nice little shop in France and, you know, does it come straight out of the fridge? No, it's been sitting outside for 3 hours maturing, and that's why it tastes nicer. But strictly speaking, you're not allowed to do it.
Okay. You sell Welsh cheese here, don't you?
We don't sell cheese, but we do Welsh cheese platter lunches.
Yeah.
So, there are some very, very good Welsh cheeses around. So, as we're a Welsh producer, we decided to use Welsh
Have you
Welsh
looked
potters.
At matching your wines to the cheeses? Do you match the wines to the cheeses?
Yes. Obviously, some of the wines go better with some of the cheese than others. And whoever comes for lunch is, you know, they choose which wine they want. Mm-hmm. So they don't all, the sparklings aren't as good a match with the cheese. But if you like sparkling wine and that's what you want, then that's what you have.
Yeah, so I'm very much of the 80% of food goes with 80% of wine. And 10% is fantastic, 10% is a disaster. So as long as you can avoid the disasters, you're pretty safe. We were talking earlier about you guys expanding and looking for new vineyard sites. Do you see yourself growing continuously, or is there a natural size you want to get to? Or
yeah, the natural size is sort of 18 to 20 acres. We feel we've got spare capacity at the moment. There's David and myself who run the vineyard, and we've got Carolyn who works for us full time. Joy spends a lot more time on the cellar door and the selling and marketing, etc. And we feel up to 20 acres, which is doubling the size we've currently got, we can cope with because we've got all the machinery and everything. We feel we can handle more pruning, etc. But we think anything above that, we would start losing control because we feel at the moment we can give every single vine, if you like, individual attention. And biodynamics is a lot more labor intensive to go beyond 20 acres. You're basically going to have to just start employing more people, and that's just going to erode your margins. So in terms of maximizing margins and maximizing quality, we think 18, 20 acres is about right.
That's an economic limit as opposed to a lifestyle limit, or is it a bit of both?
It's definitely lifestyle limit as well, because we do have a super lifestyle at the moment. But you know, very strongly in economic, financial, to maximize your bottom line. Mm-hmm. It's at 20 acres, we're going to be maximizing our bottom line.
But I think anything more than that, then you lose the ability to keep an eye on the vineyard so that any potential problems are noticed before they develop.
Yeah.
Anything over 20 acres, I think, would be a lot more difficult.
I think you start getting qualitative issues as well. You know, just take pruning, for example. It doesn't sound very technical, but, you know, pruning correctly is very, very important. So If we went beyond 20 acres, you've got to have more permanent staff. They're only pruning for 3 months a year. Yeah. So what do you do with them for the other 9 months a year? Yet you've got to train them to a very high standard. If three of you can handle 20 acres as well as 10 acres, then you're fine because the three of you have got lots of other work other times of the vineyard.
Yeah,
and you're not looking necessarily for seasonal workers coming in.
Not for pruning, no, yeah. Definitely not for pruning because it's a very specialized technical job. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys, and I appreciate your time, and cheers very much, and good luck.
Okay. Thank you, Chris. Nice to meet you.
Cheers.